Hour number two of Sports 180 begins on this Thursday afternoon. We have a little rain here in East Tennessee. Be safe as you drive around out there. Hello to everyone streaming as well. You can find us on the WNML app. You can tell your smart speaker to play 99.1 The Sports Animal as well. So hello to everyone out there, wherever you might be listening. We appreciate you being with us. As Heather Harrington's here, I'm Josh Ward, Sam Foreman as well. And we'll talk more Tennessee football this afternoon as we talked about that 2006 Tennessee-Georgia game last hour with Jonathan Wade. You can hear the Vol Network call of it coming up Saturday at about 12:20 here on the station. And we talked last segment, Heather. We both went with the same selection, Tennessee versus Mississippi State, as the most important win so far for Jeremy Pruitt. But I do think there are a number of games you can choose from. Some might say Auburn just because you needed a big win to believe in what was going on back in 2018, even though the season didn't play out. You could point to other games because they were probably tougher to win, I guess, in the 2019 season. We both went with Mississippi State. What would have been your second choice if you didn't go Mississippi State? What would you have gone with?
You know, I was kind of looking down the list, and I was wondering what it could be. I think if you wanted to point to last season, a game that it took a lot for Tennessee to win, going to Kentucky. I mean, all we heard building up to that game was how Kentucky was a better team. And now I do think that Mark Stoops has elevated that program. I mean, the Kentucky Wildcats are not a doormat at this point in time, but the fact that Tennessee was still able to reestablish that, hey, we just don't lose to that team. I thought that that was a really good thing for Jeremy Pruitt. If you want to go back to the previous season, I think it's a no-brainer to pick that Auburn game because you hadn't beaten an SEC West team in a while. The fact that you were on the road, the fact that that was a game that Tennessee was really not given a big-time shot at even being competitive.
Yeah, they were big underdogs.
Yeah, they were big underdogs. So, they weren't even supposed to keep it close. And the fact that you went down there and you won, I thought that gave a lot of tangible evidence on the recruiting trail for guys to buy in early, which led to a great signing class that Jeremy Pruitt had that year. So I thought that if you're not going to take the Mississippi State or Kentucky games from last season, the Auburn game is definitely one to point to.
Yeah. South Carolina, because of the win against Will Muschamp, we had that mentioned to us. Tennessee was 0-7 against Muschamp going in. So for Jeremy Pruitt to beat Will Muschamp, that was the easiest one for Tennessee fans to watch as the second half went along because Tennessee just rolled up. You know, the others were so hard fought down to the end. The Kentucky and Missouri games, the Indiana games brought so much stress.
Yeah.
There was a little bit of that in the first half, but the second half, Tennessee pulled away and you had big plays on special teams in that game where you ran them out of the stadium. So you didn't have many of those. I guess you didn't have any in the big games for Tennessee in 2019. I don't know that. Yeah, you know, Vanderbilt's really going to count there as much, and that was kind of a ugly day anyway. So
yeah.
Beating Will Muschamp in the way that Tennessee did would be really important. I would probably go Mississippi State and then Kentucky because you get the big stop there. If you lose to Kentucky, you're not going to have the winning streak to close things out. It's going to be disappointing to lose to Kentucky with, yeah, you're going to have the conversation. Another loss with a wide receiver quarterback, even though Lynn Bowden was terrific. I mean,
yeah,
he was a terrific player for them in that spot. Still, losing to Kentucky when they had a wide receiver at that position for the second time in 10 years probably wouldn't have set well with a lot of Tennessee fans.
I think it would have very much changed a narrative, and it would have been another kind of black mark on Jeremy Pruitt's resume, which, I mean, it has some. The fact that you've been blown out by major opponents, the Georgia State loss, I mean, it's not like the resume is flawless at this point, but going back to them changing what was being said about them, it started with the Mississippi State game, and I agree with you, it continued through Kentucky, because even leading up to that Kentucky game, Tennessee fans were kind of worried about it, and it was something that was very much on the front of fans' minds, like, oh, could we really lose this one, because look at what Kentucky's building. So even when Kentucky, and then coming out of the game, the biggest thing is after the season is like, man, Kentucky has one of the best seasons they've ever had on record, and Tennessee still beat them. That is definitely a source of pride for Tennessee fans.
Yeah, no doubt. You had the Brian Niedermeyer photo that he posted on Twitter with the barrel on his desk as well. You're not taking that photo if you lose to Kentucky in 2019.
Yeah, where did he dig that out of? Has it just been chilling in Neyland Stadium? Is it an equipment room? Is it like under lock and key? I was very curious to see how Brian Niedermeyer got his hands on that. Shout out to our peeps at Nothing Too Fancy. The last time we did a remote there, Josh, they had one youth extra small Peyton Manning shirt, you know, lifting up that beer barrel. Guess whose closet it is in, and I got it on super sale. I can't wear it, by the way. It was not a shirt for me. It's for the boys.
I just appreciate that you didn't make a short joke and say I bought it for you as a gift. So thanks for that.
I missed my opportunity. See? Gosh. Yeah. The rain.
It was hanging up right there. So, yeah, that was a big one as well. There are a number of choices that you could pull up. Tennessee fans are now hoping that a year from now that you're choosing a bigger opponent, because beating Mississippi State and beating Kentucky and beating South Carolina is nice. Beating Auburn, that's a big opponent. It's just that the season didn't really bring you anything. Yeah. You just had that Saturday, which is a big deal still. But a win against Florida, a win against Georgia, Alabama, Oklahoma, any of those would be that would change the conversation, I think, among a lot of Tennessee fans in terms of where the direction of the program is. Beating Kentucky, Mississippi State, South Carolina, Missouri, that one should not be overlooked either. That helped get Tennessee back into this point of the conversation where you're saying, okay, you've gotten to the point where you should be. Let's see if you can rise up where we want you to be with Florida and Georgia. 2020 will give us a better idea of that one.
Well, and I think, you know, along those same lines, it's also showing positive progression, which you kind of alluded to there. Like, the Auburn game, it was huge for that season. Didn't mean a lot in the grand scheme of things with just how the season went overall. But last year, when you look at Mississippi State and being able to bounce back after a 1-4 start, and that was kind of the catalyst to get you on that win streak that you went on after the Alabama game, that's positive progression because it led to a bowl game. It led to a bowl game win. It led to a great recruiting offseason for Jeremy Pruitt. So now, like you're talking about, if you start upping the ante and you're able to get another marquee win this season and it leads to more positive consequences, you know, a bigger bowl game, maybe a bigger bowl win, maybe a better SEC record, a 5-3, a 6-2 SEC record. I mean, that could go a long way in proving that Jeremy Pruitt truly is building this thing the right way.
Tennessee fans certainly hope so. Mike with the first response to us on Twitter at Sports180. He says 2019 Mississippi State. The next response we get, 2018 Auburn. So I think those are going to come to mind for a lot of Tennessee fans in terms of you look at important or impactful, however you choose. That's why I think there are a number of games to pick from, which is a good thing. If you didn't have that many important games to pick from after 2 years, you'd have another problem on your hands. We'll continue this conversation a little bit later in the afternoon. We'll see what John Wilkerson thinks when he stops by the show coming up at 1:30. The conversation being most important win for Jeremy Pruitt, who's celebrating his 46th birthday today. Most important win for him through two seasons as Tennessee's football coach. 656-9900 is how you can join the show today as well. We'll catch you up on what's going on in the news department of the world coming up next right here on Sports 180 on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal.
It all comes down to the he said, she said. Here's Sports 180 with Josh and Heather.
Back on Sports 180, thanks for being with us. As we continue with you until 3 o'clock, Sports Talk will take over then. John Wilkerson will stop by coming up at 1:30. Sam Foreman, I apologize. Who's checking in with us today for our COVID-19 update? Alex Abernathy. We say hello to our friend from News Talk 98.7 WOKI. Alex, we appreciate the time as always. How are you?
I'm doing well, Josh. How are you?
Hey, doing great. What's the latest out there with what's coming in?
All right, so not a ton of new news coming out today. We do have the new Knox County Health Department numbers for COVID-19. There are 367 confirmed cases. That is up one from yesterday in the county. 47 of those cases are active. That's actually down one. And the explanation we got for that was because a few of the cases have been transferred out of the Knox County jurisdiction and into other counties. 315 people have recovered. That is up two from yesterday. And then we have no change in hospitalizations and no change in deaths, which means we have two people currently hospitalized within the county and five deaths connected to COVID-19. In terms of news, we did have something drop late yesterday that Tennessee is going to stop providing the names and addresses of COVID-19 patients to first responders. A few weeks ago, it came out that Bill Lee had authorized a policy that would allow law enforcement to know the names and addresses of people that had tested positive for COVID-19. The reasoning there was that it was to protect our frontline workers, but what they found was that it gave a false sense of security when going into homes of people that had not tested positive, and there was a lot of pushback from both sides of the aisle of people that said it was an invasion of privacy, and of course, they cited the Fourth Amendment there. So on May 31st, that policy will be removed, and there will be no more data given about data about people's health given to law enforcement. Just wrapped up a few minutes ago with the KCHD health briefing for the day. Not a ton here, just a couple bullet points. Number one, if you want to get tested for COVID-19 by the county, you do not have to call ahead anymore. Used to, you'd call ahead, they would give you an hour of time to come in, you would come then. Now it's more of a free-for-all. If you want to go, you go to one of their locations whenever you wish. You can see a list of their locations on the KCHD website. Also, Charity Menefee, she works with the health department. She gave a little rundown today about isolation and quarantining because that practice is still continuing. And basically what she said was, if you test positive for the coronavirus, KCHD will reach out to you and ask you to self-isolate. And that's when they start going down the long train of the contact tracing path, where if you've been around someone who tested positive, they start asking you to quarantine. Which raises the question, what's the difference between self-isolation and quarantine? In reality, they're basically the same thing. There's really no difference there. So, of course, you don't have to do what KCHD tells you. This is just who they will reach out to, and that's what they will recommend for you to do. Like I said, not a ton right now. We'll get more numbers from the state and everything later this afternoon. But for now, guys, our COVID-19 coverage is brought to you by Advanced Heat, AC, and Plumbing. As always, your family's comfort is their family business.
Good stuff. Alex Abernathy from News Talk 98.7 WOKI. Alex, I have a question putting you on the spot before we let you go. Sports related. One question we've asked today is, through two seasons as Tennessee's football coach, what do you think is the most important win for Jeremy Pruitt to this point? Is there one game that would stand out as the most important? Not necessarily the best. You can view it however you would say, but the most important win for Jeremy Pruitt to this point.
Ooh, I'm going to combo it with Jeremy Pruitt and Jarrett Garantano. And that's going to be the Missouri win last year, because it was in the string of the long winning streak towards the end of the season. Garantano had arguably his best game as a Vol. And so I think that gave hope on the horizon, not just from a coaching standpoint, but also from a quarterback play standpoint going forward.
Okay. Yeah, I mentioned last segment, I think the Missouri win's a little bit underrated. So that would back up our idea that there are a number of games you could choose from. So the Missouri win, 2019, very important as well. Good stuff, Alex. We appreciate you stopping by and appreciate all the updates.
Yes, sir. What has been the most common answer to that question? I'm really curious.
Heather, I feel like it's a mix of Mississippi State and Auburn. We're starting to see a little Gator Bowl movement, though. We're starting to get some Indiana win. It's the most recent. It keeps the streak alive as well. You have the fourth quarter comeback. We have TJ saying it's the Gator Bowl win against Indiana because of the speech after the game as well, that it's about to be the decade of the Vols. You can't really say that if you lose to Indiana, probably. So I think we can, if it's a pie chart, we're going to split this up pretty, evenly, but there's going to be a good mix here.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. I still think number one and number two is Mississippi State and Auburn, which is weird because they're both SEC West opponents, which in the grand scheme of things, you're trying to climb the ladder and climb the rungs of to make it to an SEC championship. So those East games mean more, but I don't know. Those West games were very exciting.
I thought about the Mississippi State game as well. My answer came down between Mississippi State and Missouri for sure.
Some would say the Mocs, because if you didn't beat Chattanooga last season, well,
stop it.
It's an ugly conversation afterward. We haven't had that one officially come in quite yet. Alex Abernathy from News Talk 98.7. Remember the website. Keep it bookmarked, newstalk987.com. Thanks, Alex. We'll talk to you again here soon.
Thanks, guys.
Sports 180 continuing. So you wouldn't go with the team down I-75?
No. I mean, I get why people were kind of freaking out before.
The look, yeah.
I mean, remember when the line came out, we were like, seriously, that's all they're predicting Tennessee to beat Chattanooga by? I mean, it was just so dumb. That was one of the hardest weeks of my professional career because I just wanted to put duct tape over people's mouths that were like, oh, Chattanooga, you never know. Come on. We do know. We know.
Yeah, sometimes you do, although... You know, people probably said before the Georgia State game, you never know, and found out.
Very true. But you knew that was not going to happen twice in one year. Come on now.
Yeah. Sports. It's a good thing that was in 2019 and not 2020. I will say that much.
Yeah, no kidding. We just got to, if we can get to this football season, I have a feeling that things could be more positive for Tennessee. It's just getting there is the trick.
Yeah, we have this. It has to be South Carolina last year in terms of most important win for Jeremy Pruitt. Had we lost that game and not won the last six, the recruits would not be coming and the optimism just wouldn't be here this year. I don't think that's necessarily wrong. I just think that applies to several games because Kentucky, South Carolina, Missouri, they're all one game in that final six stretch. So I'm not saying he's wrong. It's just that... The reasoning there could be applied to several games.
Yeah, and the fact that South Carolina was just a bad team last year, I can't call that the most important win for Jeremy. I get what the listener is saying, and I think that he makes some valid points, but I just can't go there with the quote-unquote most important win of his tenure. And didn't, yeah, I mean, didn't mean anything.
Yeah, I would go Mississippi State. That's the way you win as well. And you are right. It's kind of funny that SEC West games, it took a decade almost for Tennessee to get another win. 2010 against Ole Miss was the previous win against an SEC West opponent before Tennessee went to Auburn and won. So 8 years is how long it had been. And here we are talking about back-to-back years with wins against SEC West opponents. If Tennessee can beat the other SEC West opponent that pops up on the schedule each year, I think that will replace the conversation of most important wins to this point for Jeremy Pruitt.
Yes, and that would be a Alabama. National conversation that we would be having, yes.
Yeah. Some, if that happens, some would say that the tide will have turned for Tennessee football.
People that love dad jokes would definitely say that.
Like me.
Sign me up on the list. Somebody who may or may not, John Wilkerson, he joins us next. We'll talk some Tennessee football with him. Major League Baseball maybe trying to make something happen. We'll see what the players are able to get done here in the next 48 hours. We'll talk about all of that coming up with another 90 minutes of Sports 180 to go. With Heather Harrington, I'm Josh Ward. Sam Foreman's here on FM 99.1, the sports animal.
Much like the last few days, a warm and humid early afternoon and some sunshine will lead to a few storms. WVLT weather alert in place through 6 p.m. as showers roll south to north. They'll be isolated, but some of them could be on the stronger to severe side. And 82 today, 84 on your Friday. Looking better for the second half of the weekend into next week. From the WVLT Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Ben Cathy.
Thanks for being with us on Sports 180 on this Thursday afternoon. We are halfway home. Sports Talk will take over 90 minutes from right now. With Heather Harrington, I'm Josh Ward. Hope you're having a great day so far. Remember, you can always find us on the WNML app. Listen back in the podcast section of the app for any interview, any show, right here on the station. And coming up on Sports Talk this afternoon, you'll hear John Wilkerson, who will join us for the next half hour right here on Sports 180. John, good afternoon. How are you?
Doing well. Hope you guys are.
Yeah, doing really well. And conversation we've had today, it's Jeremy Pruitt's birthday, so we've talked about some of the success he's had as Tennessee's coach to this point. Is there a game that would stand out as the most important win for Jeremy as Tennessee's head coach? And you can look at that however you would want to, but if you look at the 2018 and 19 seasons, which game would you choose as maybe the most important win for him as Tennessee's coach?
Well, I've been thinking about this since I heard you guys start the conversation, and I think you could come up with really three distinct answers. I'm going to go with this year's, this past season's Kentucky game. If you don't win that game, then I think that there perhaps is a setback. I think they still make the a bowl game because I think they would win at Missouri, and they would beat Vanderbilt. But I just think to keep things going in the right direction, to get that win on the road, I thought that was really big. It gave them a chance to go ahead, keep the streak alive as they finished with, I guess, six straight wins to close the season, including the bowl game. But I would put that Kentucky game there. But I think you could also make an argument for his win, the win that he has against his highest-rated team, which is the victory over Kentucky last season, or I should say in 2018, when they were number 11 and they came down here, and Tennessee just took control of the game. And then the other game that I would put on my Jeremy Pruitt Heisman ballot would be the win at Auburn, simply for the fact that it changed the conversation for Tennessee. When you consider that they had not won against the Western Division, any Western Division opponent in forever, I just thought that was huge. And it came at a good time because I think it was, even though he himself admits that the buy-in wasn't as good as it should have been because he didn't do everything he could have to convince those that he inherited, hey, follow me and good things will happen, which I think he did such a good job of improving for last season in 2019. But that win at Auburn, I just think it came at a good time. You had lost back-to-back games to Georgia and Florida. Things weren't looking good, and I thought that was the first step in the right direction. It ruined Auburn's season, but but I would have those three. This past season's win at Kentucky, the season before win at home over the Wildcats for their highest win, or their win over their highest-ranked opponent thus far, and then the win at Auburn, which was a victory for the Vols, long-awaited against a Western Division foe.
See, I think there's a perception problem, John, with what Kentucky actually is now and the elevated level that Mark Stoops has that program, to where I think people still think of them as the Kentucky is old and maybe don't give as much respect to Jeremy Pruitt for those two wins as what you just did and your reasoning for it. But I honestly, I think you're pretty spot on.
Well, I do think that Kentucky has proven itself to be a better and much more solid program than it has been. Obviously, with some trolling that goes back and forth between some Kentucky sports radio show hosts and Vol Twitter, I think the emotions are almost always raw. I mean, you even had Dan Issel, Kentucky basketball legend, that chimed in on Tennessee kind of sniping the bowl games away, the bowl game spot away from Kentucky last year, with Tennessee getting the trip to Jacksonville. So I just think that it's it really is something to see, the back and forth. But I think that it is, I think, one, Mark Stoops is very deserving for what he has created in Lexington, and at the same time, Tennessee fans get to enjoy the fact that there is sheer dominance for the orange and white over the big blue.
Yeah, and that's interesting, John. You know, there's the whole the most important game is the next one you play, which is definitely correct. It's also kind of a lame thing to try to pitch for sports talk radio. It actually applies this past season, though, doesn't it? Because, you know, if they don't win the Mississippi State game, what happens next? That's a question. But if they don't beat South Carolina, if they don't beat Kentucky, if they don't beat Missouri, the season still ends up obviously not being what it was. But there could be the domino effect one way or the other on how things would have played out. So Tennessee being able to regroup and just go win this game, go win the next game, I do think there was some kind of cumulative effect. And Kentucky had had several beating Kentucky. I mean, that game had an impact in several ways by the end of the season as well, including the bowl game that you're bringing up.
Well, and also I just thought the way the game played out, I mean, Tennessee gutted that one out. It looked like the Wildcats were simply just going to put them away. 13 points, I guess, was it in the first quarter, and then not another point. And then Tennessee had the great goal line stand at the end. I just thought it was a game that had a chance to get out of hand, and probably if it had been played in 2018, it would have. Especially when you look at the timing of in the place of the season, because Tennessee, of course, fell flat when it had a chance the year before at 5-5 to get to a bowl game and didn't. It was pretty much embarrassed by both Missouri and Vanderbilt. So I just thought that the way they gutted out that win was something. And you're right to bring up the Mississippi State game. That was key as well. If the Vols don't win that game, then I do think that you don't see the finish that you saw. And even more so, goodness gracious, we would have had to deal with a member of the morning show being on top of a dealership forever. Woof.
I actually wouldn't have minded that part. Just kidding. Let me ask you this, John, because we're talking about, you know, positive progression moving forward. And this is coming on the heels of Tom Fornelli's comments earlier this week about, you know, saying Alabama's susceptible to being beat by Tennessee this year. When you're looking at a possible or maybe the strongest possibility of a marquee win this season for Jeremy Pruitt, what game would you circle?
Boy, that's a really good question. I would think if the schedule remained the same in terms of the outlay, which is changing a little bit for 2020, I would have circled Georgia, because normally it's in the first month of the season. The Bulldogs would be going through the transition that they are, and that is they return one starting offensive lineman. They've got a new quarterback, even though it looks to be a veteran quarterback. And normally you'd be playing them, I guess, right around that first week of October, which would be game number 5. And so I would have thought that would be the best opportunity for Tennessee, even though the game would be in Athens. I just think that might have been. But as it stands right now, gosh, I want to say Florida because it's here. But then I also give Tennessee the opportunity to go to Oklahoma, because once again, the Sooners are going through another change at quarterback. I don't know that they've had anybody that transfers in for the one season, you know, pro starter kit tutelage under Lincoln Riley. So I just think that I think Tennessee has a shot in Norman, and I would probably put Oklahoma number one and at Oklahoma number one and Florida number two, just for where they happen on the schedule.
John, do you think we should reevaluate the home and away conversation with the, at least right now, lack of knowledge of what fan capacity will be? That, you know, going to Norman's not going to be the typical road environment right now, but coming to Neyland Stadium is not going to be expected to be the same kind of environment in terms of fan allowance. Maybe that changes, but right now, if you're talking about, I don't know, 25% to 50% capacity at most, is going to Norman easier than normal? But is coming to Neyland Stadium easier than normal? Does that affect things at all for this fall?
Well, I think any effort to checkerboard will really come up short.
It'll look like patchwork.
wearing the wrong shirt. I guess I'll have to sit 6 feet over here. Anyhow, I think it's a very valid point, simply for the fact we just don't know. I mean, You know, Iowa State's doing what it's doing and selling 30,000 season tickets, and you have to have a season ticket to be able to get into the stadium. I think that's a raw deal for students, but I also fully understand that you can't assume exactly what the layout will be and what guidelines will be in practice when we get to the month of September, or even late August for that matter. So I do think that it's a very fair question. And I would expect at this point in time that road games may not be as difficult as they normally are, as well as home games might not provide the same advantage you're used to, because you just don't know how many folks will be on hand. And so, yeah, I think there is the chance for you to be able to go somewhere and perform better than you normally might. I also think that Tennessee would be in better position to go on the road if indeed we weren't dealing with anything outside of the ordinary, because I just think Tennessee's a more veteran ball club. You have greater depth, you have better talent, and I think you have more experience, especially when you look at what could be on hand if the waiver comes through for Cade Mays, just starting up front with your front five. I mean, when you look at 4 5-star athletes and performing across the line and a 6-year senior, you know, anchoring the line at center, I just think that gives an offense a chance to be really, really sound. And no doubt about it, it still remains true for Tennessee. Their success or lack thereof is probably going to be predicated by what they get out of either Jarrett Garantano or whoever winds up at quarterback leading the way on offense. You have to have good quarterback play, especially if you want to win on the road. But I think a veteran offensive line, a talented offensive line, as much as Tennessee's had up front in a while, is also something that would be a huge chip in Tennessee's favor.
I don't want to take away from any of that analysis that you just laid out, because I think you are spot on with your quarterback conversation and how this offensive line could dramatically change the conversation. But when you talked about the checkerboard, something popped into my mind. If fans are allowed in Neyland Stadium this year, does the mask have to match the shirt, or can you go orange with a smoky gray mask? I mean, there's a lot of fashion questions that I'm going to need to get caught up on if fans are allowed to tailgate and participate in game atmosphere.
I think it comes down to personal choice. I think we all know that there are accent colors. Black has been one that has been utilized by so many Tennessee teams throughout the years. Whether we're talking track, baseball, you can just go across the board and know that times it's been much more heavily used by some outfits rather than others. Smoky gray would also be a good way to bring out the orange or the white, whichever you're wearing that day, above the belt. And then there are some that just prefer to go color rush, all orange, all white, something along those lines. I am one that is, I don't like the color rush where it's just the same monochrome top to bottom. I prefer to mix it up. I like to go orange and white or whatever. I like to go based on home or away. If you think the team is wearing orange that day, you wear orange. If they're wearing white, you wear white, and so on. That's my own personal preference, but hey, that's just me.
Yeah, like with the NFL, John, my biggest issue with the color rush in the NFL is that it looks bad.
Not just bad, so bad. And it's not as though it's the regular team colors. I mean, whatever this – I hope Jacksonville, the Jags, got a great deal from Goulden's Mustard because they've been wearing their color for quite some time, and it is putrid. And it's like, did that actually come off of a color wheel or out of a baby's diaper?
Oh, yowza.
Yeah, that's a rhetorical question, I think, as well. John Wilkerson's with us. We'll come back. Major League Baseball, will they ever play again? We'll discuss coming up here. We have another segment with John. He'll be on Sports Talk this afternoon as well. Of course, with Heather Harrington, I'm Josh Ward on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal.
We're what Willis was talking about. 99.1, the Sports Animal.
This is Sports 180. Thank you for being with us. Online, 99.1thesportsanimal.com. With Heather Harrington, I'm Josh Ward, Sam Foreman producing. And we have another segment with John Wilkerson before he heads off to get ready for Sports Talk at 3. And John, we continue to wait to see what will happen with Major League Baseball. I remain optimistic that they'll play because surely they're going to play. But reports came out last night that the players are essentially planning to ignore the proposal that came earlier this week from the owners and provide their own with more games to be played. What do you think about what you've read, what you've heard, and where things stand as we're here just a few days to go in the month of May with no agreement in Major League Baseball?
Boy, Major League Baseball, with the conversation that's ongoing, has given the NFL something to point to and say, man, they just can't get along, can they? Can't get out of their own way. It really is ridiculous that at a point in time like we're experiencing right here, right now, they can't get past the we need to work together as opposed to let's do this, which benefits our side of the fence as much as possible. I just think they need to recognize all that is going on, what it would mean if they could find an agreement for this calendar year only. That's all they have to do is reach an agreement for this calendar year only, and they can do so with the notion that the players don't have to give up the less than equitable split in revenue that they would be agreeing to, a prorated salary. Owners need to do what they can to make sure that the guys who wear their uniform are taken care of to the best degree possible, simply for the fact that whether it be those that are on their major league roster right now or those that could be with the 40-man roster and their minor league organization, I just think that both sides are being incredibly short-sighted as well as tone-deaf to, again, what all is still going on and has yet to be decided and or determined. I just think that you look at what the NBA, the NHL, the NFL are all doing and trying to get back or keep things on schedule to start their season like football. Baseball has just decided to muck it all up. And I really think that they are missing out on an opportunity. I think NASCAR, on the other hand, is trying to make the absolute most of this opportunity that they've been really the most organized return full force, biggest spotlight to this point, and they're trying to make the most of it to perhaps re-energize a fan base and following because of what they're hoping to get done. Baseball's just missing the boat, and for them to be so short-sighted, it's really ridiculous. And again, it shows that they don't have any concern out of their own tight circles for all that others might be experiencing, and certainly could use the release and relief of being able to watch something like as great a game as baseball is.
And I get it from the player's perspective. Like, they don't want to be taken advantage of. They don't want this to set a tone whenever another collective bargaining agreement comes up. But I get what you're saying, too. Like, can we all just figure it out for right now and table any long-term conversations? I just wonder, is there any repairing this divide between the players and the owners in Major League Baseball?
Boy, I sure hope so. You would hope that somebody on each side, at least, or perhaps even a handful, would be able to step forward and say, come on, you got to understand, let's build this bridge for this year, and then do so collectively with exactly what you're talking about. It doesn't have to say anything that happens this year is written in stone. If they expand the playoffs, if they go with the universal DH, all of that can be for just 2020 and 2020 alone. Everything else will go back into the conversation, back onto the table. And you could also say right now that all we're doing is patchworking this year together, and then we will go back to the parameters of the last agreement that we had with the CBA, and then know that there are going to be both sides wanting to plead their case for significant changes and or advantages for their respective side in the future. There's nothing wrong with that, but they are missing the boat, and they're really looking poor when it comes to it's such a bad look with what they're doing and just kind of scrapping and clawing at one another, when you have the chance to just say, let's do what it takes to get back on the field, and we'll worry about the big picture things for 2021 and beyond.
Yeah, you're right, because in a lot of ways, John, I can side with the players and what their opinions are, but they come across, at least a few have, representing a lot of the players as big jerks. And fans, at some point, they're not going to care what their opinions are. They're going to care the way the message is being delivered. Like Blake Snell, I thought he had some fair points. His delivery was very poor, I thought, and that's going to make the most impact in the end.
Yeah, it really will. And I don't fault anyone for having concerns, because, again, we still have many more questions than there are answers. Doesn't mean that things can't move forward. Doesn't mean that things are going to, in the end, be for the most part all right for the vast majority of people. But still, I mean, if you've experienced it, if you have concerns, if there are reasons, perhaps it's people who live with you in your household or people you interact with on a regular basis that you don't have any notion that you would like to do anything that would put them in any kind of danger. That's all fair, because there are those that have this at the forefront of their concerns, and there are those that have pushed it to the back burner. I don't know that either one has to be 100% the case, but I just think that baseball right now is looking the least organized and least cooperative when it comes to trying to make something happen to just add to the picture of things that can change the conversation in terms of just giving folks a chance to catch their breath and perhaps worry, just get a break from any worries they have, whether it's those that are impacted specifically with either losing a business, their job, so many different things that have become just such serious issues for those to deal with. Anything that gives you a small break from that kind of real world and immediate impact concern, I think is paramount, and baseball is just missing the boat entirely thus far.
Do you think the early July timeline of returning to action is still a legitimate one with how this process has played out?
I'm going to hold out optimism that it is. I think that as divided as they appear, it would seem that it would be perhaps a pipe dream. But you are talking about maybe they were talking about June 10th. That was kind of the target for when they are able to get back on the diamond, go through spring training part two, and build up for a start 1st of July or 4th of July, kind of resuming or even starting, for their case, the season. I think that's all within reach, but still, it doesn't look like they're anywhere close to being able to come to that peaceful, easy feeling that has everybody working lockstep to get the game back on the field.
Hey, John, more important subject before you go. It's National Hamburger Day. What would you put on the ideal burger? What's your burger setup?
I'll say this. For me, I can be just like it's a my favorite kind of pizza is just cheese. My burger almost the same way. For instance, when I enjoy Litton's, I usually have just the bun, burger, cheese, and a white onion, and not a full white onion, just pieces of white onion. That to me is glorious. But if I have my pick, it probably is just cheese. I'm very simple, very easy to please.
Yeah. Do you more often go fries or onion rings with the burger?
Ooh, at Litton's, it's hard to pass up those onion rings.
Boy, you're not kidding. And of course, outside of Knoxville, my favorite place to get a burger, because you have the choice between beef and bison, is Ted's Montana Grill. And I always make the most of the SEC locales that are fortunate to have one. And I ask aloud to the universe, why doesn't Knoxville deserve one? I know a couple of places spots that would be perfect for it. But anyhow, I usually go with the 50-50. They give you that option. So you get the burger, you get half fries, half onion rings. And goodness gracious, just like Ralphie, all is right in the world when that happens.
I mean, that sounds like that old cliche, having your cake and eating it too. You get fries and onion rings. I love that. But I am a little disappointed to hear you touting another restaurant that needs to come to Knoxville besides Whataburger. I'm very disappointed.
Well, and Whataburger, I love the fact that there are SEC locales for them. I mean, Texas A&M, obviously, but in between trips to Fayetteville, they had added a Whataburger that was within walking distance of our hotel. Whataburger is unbelievable. So, yes, if it would the easiest one to drop in would be Whataburger. And the fact that you can go to Hoover, Alabama, boom, there's one. Boy, it just makes that stretch of 59 so much more worthwhile when you know what's waiting potentially at the end.
Yeah, you can also, by the way, you can break rules sometimes. So if you find some burgers like at Stock and Barrel, they have some burgers that offer some crispy onions on the burger, then you get the French fries. So you're kind of cheating.
Very true.
Yeah, getting both it's a different ring, of course, but the onion and the fries both together, combo.
Well, and also I have to give a shout out to Knoxville owned and such a great operation, Muya on Kingston Pike. That has become that when Tennessee baseball sweeps a series, Penny and I, we go to Muya to celebrate a sweeps only. But that's what's, and of course they have the, like you can see others that do it. They have the lettuce wrap burger if you want to go without the bun. And Penny loves the onion straws that they'll put on a burger, which, again, talks about. And I think that right now we're very close. In fact, you can pencil it in. We think that Muya might have the best fries in Knoxville because they are just glorious. But anyhow, you have so many wonderful options. But you're right. When you have the fried onions, that does kind of give you an end around as to, I think I'll have that and then enjoy my fries just as much.
Why have we done this to ourselves? I'm so hungry now. We will move forward. John, a fun conversation. We appreciate the time. We'll check in with you again before Sports Talk at 3 o'clock.
Always look forward to Thursdays. Thank you. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, John. We come back with 1 hour to go, 656-9900 to join us here on Sports 180 on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal.